what is the best business model for creatives?
Do you ever wish life had an undo button? Walking the balance between business and the creative life can be hard. But Matt and Shelby are here to attempt to answer the tough questions, so you don't need an undo. Presented by Made by Things, this is the Command Z Show.
And we're back with another fun episode of the Command Z Show. Shelby, how are you?
Pretty good. You know, I'm just moving and grooving. It's March. Still a little cold.
Yep. Anything fascinating and new?
Anything fascinating and new? That's a great question. No. I've started a different, hold on, let me plug a different podcast here for a second. We're four episodes in on the Depth of Field Independent Filmmaking Podcast. Mm-hmm.
Go over there, give it 9 stars if you can.
Yeah, give it all the stars that you possibly can. It's pretty good.
Make new accounts just so you can give it 5 stars.
Yeah, just so you can do reviews. Yeah, that's a podcast that was recently started. It's about independent filmmaking and the independent filmmaking industry. So it's pretty fun. Do a lot of good updates if you're interested in the industry itself or gear or whatever. So I'm going to plug that. Anyway, that's what I have going on right now. Nice. Yep.
Look at that. Again, where can they find more information?
Depth of Field Podcast. It is on YouTube. You can just put it into your YouTube bar. It's also on Spotify. And if you're a Facebook user, you can follow it on Facebook. I don't know why we have Facebook, but I get the best results out of Facebook. So I don't know if there's anybody else out there that gets good Facebook results, but we're a club of, nice. Of two. So.
Nice. Well, sounds like you got a lot of stuff going on right now.
I know. So many things. There we go.
I think we have a really maybe different episode.
I think so.
Planned for today. We'll kind of see where this leads. But we have a question. You have a question to kind of get us started. Let's hear it.
The big question of the day is, what's the business? Sorry, let me start over.
What's the best?
I sound like Julia Child. Okay.
What is the best?
Today we're making Coco Bone. Okay.
You gotta do the whole episode as Julia Child.
Okay, I can do that.
do the question like her.
Okay. Okay, hold on. What's the best business model for creatives? Today, on the First Chef. On the Command Seat Show.
Oh, yes. What is the best business model for creatives? Amazing question, Julia.
Thanks for restating it for the edit. I appreciate that.
Yeah. we're many episodes into this podcast, and we're starting to try to find ways to have more fun on this thing. So, hope you all enjoy. That concludes the Julia Child segment. getting into the question, which again is which model is best for creatives, which business model? This is something that is on my mind pretty much constantly over the last couple of years. I know this is like incredibly like dull, boring business stuff, But I feel like there's a lot that has sort of changed in this area over the last couple of years. A lot of like new possibilities has sort of opened up. And I think it's just leading to a really exciting time for all creatives, no matter, you know, whether you're, you know, trying to make it into the field for your first job or whether you've been in the field for 15, 20, 30 years. Mm-hmm. The thing that's definitely for certain is that it's changing. It's constantly changing. And while it may look similar, it's, I don't know, again, new possibilities are sort of opening up. So I'd love to just kind of go through some of the business models that I know of. And I'm pretty sure we've tried all of these at different points. So I think it'll make us a little bit more uniquely suited to be able to kind of talk about some of the pros and cons of some of these different business models.
Mm-hmm.
There are six different models that I sort of put together for us to talk about today. There may be more. I mean, I'm sure there is more, again, just over time especially, but I'm going to kind of take this from like most known to maybe lesser known, and we'll kind of walk through each one of these. So the first one is the one that everyone knows about, which is standard employment. Right, you get a job working at a studio, and you get paid hourly, and you do your work. I don't think we really need to dive into that one too much. I think it's again the standard. I guess in ways that it's sort of evolved over the last 5-10 years is like. I think a lot of people are now working from home, which I think is really fascinating. A lot of people are being told to come back into the office too, but I think specifically for creatives, I want to say that the industry is sort of finding out that people are doing their best work when they can just be comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want to say, but I don't know if other people have sort of figured that out just yet.
No, so, I'm a little interested to see like exactly if there's a comparative analysis between, you know, oftentimes we hear creatives, they don't want to work like, oh, I don't want to work in an office. I don't want to do a typical 9-to-5. I wonder how that's changed since people have been able to work at home. And if that will continue to become more popular again.
Right. And that kind of leads us to the second model, which is freelance, right? I don't think it's a secret that a lot of this industry wants to be freelance in some way or another. One of the interesting things, I guess, if we go back to number one here, which is standard employment, I feel like, I don't want to call it an exodus, but like it's sort of like this, I don't know, awakening of people wanting to be freelance that has sort of changed how full-time employment works. And that's why, I talk about things like working from home. It's one of the things that I think about all the time where I'm like, hey, okay, I get that a lot of people want to be freelance, but how do you take, the good parts of that and apply it to full-time work? And, I don't know. I think that's one of the things that's changing overall in the industry is how that full-time employment is actually being handled. But as far as that freelance side of things, so usually what we see is after somebody gets a decent amount of experience or somehow or another lands a client or two, they then quit their full-time employment and they go freelance. While being freelance as an individual or an independent contractor, I guess we'd call them, there's kind of two ways of working with people at that point. Well, I guess there's kind of three ways. I guess the first way would be hourly. You could still be an hourly contractor working for a studio, just like you would if you were a full-time employee. You generally get paid more in these situations because you have to cover your taxes, your health insurance, your retirement. So, you know, the more that you get paid there kind of covers a lot of that stuff. I see a lot of people that say that they want to be freelance because they simply get paid more. And I don't necessarily find that to be true. I think that like on paper, it can look like you're getting paid more, but now you've got to deal with paying for a lot of your own stuff, which I see a lot of people that go freelance And then about a year later, they're like, okay, I get it. Nope, not for me. And then I don't say that to try to discourage anyone from doing it, but it's just, there's a lot more to it than just getting paid a little bit more, right? So the three different ways of getting paid as a freelancer, hourly, by project. So with by project, you get onto a team and you say, okay, hey, this whole project right here, I'll do this whole thing for X amount of dollars. The third way would be as a length of contract. This is kind of like combination with hourly usually, but this could be like, hey, we need an artist for 3 months and we'd like you to be there to work on various projects that we have in. At this point, I've done all three of these at various times, including standard employment. That'd be number four. Between hourly, project, and length of time, my preference was always to go with project, because at that point, that becomes the first time where you're now encouraged to get something done faster than what it may have taken you otherwise. Mm-hmm. And I always loved being encouraged to do something faster. Because essentially, the faster you're able to get something done, you're, effectively, the more you get paid to do it. But again, if you're working hourly, then you're getting paid at that hourly rate. And as far as length of time goes, again, you're not really encouraged to get things done quickly and efficiently until you get to that paying for the project place there. Pros and cons of both of these, or all three of these, being freelance, I think there's a lot of pros, right? You get to control a lot of your own. You get to control your own destiny, basically, as far as like, all right, what project do I take on? What projects do I skip? I want to take a vacation this time. For me at this point, whenever I went freelance, that's whenever I started to, I started to really like that work-life balance that I had, I guess, where it was like, oh, I get to just go get breakfast with my family occasionally. Like there isn't somebody that I have to like report to all the time. But I mean, the cons are definitely, you could go a period of time without work. There's a lot less stability. And it's generally, again, you have to pay for your own stuff. So it's a little bit more expensive to be freelance. Your thoughts, Shelby, on points one and two?
Yeah, it's really interesting because I've never been freelance. I have only ever been standard employment. And that's because I really like the comfort of standard employment. And to me, like for freelance, for me would be like, okay, I want to start my own business as opposed to being my own individual, because I like working with a team. And it's probably comes with the territory of being a producer, but I like being comfortable with people that I work with on a regular basis and understanding them. So that's kind of how my thinking is. But I also 100% understand why some creatives want to go freelance and want to have that control. And I think one of the other big pros of freelance too is like, you know, on the opposite side of getting really familiar with a team is you're always working with different people. You might always be kind of like going to different teams and meeting new people and learning new styles. So that's another thing that's like very exciting and enticing about freelance as well, or the learning opportunities that come from that.
Right. And it kind of gets us to point number three, which is the agency model, which is, you as a person are an agent of other people, basically being able to disperse work between a team of people. This is what Made by Things is. We are an agency. Usually this is kind of like this kind of transition point where it's really hard to just decide like, oh, you know what? I want to do number three. I want to have an agency. Like there's usually the steps that you sort of have to take, and we're sort of going through those steps kind of indirectly. But usually, like, if you go freelance and you're like, oh, I am too busy, like, great, I need to hire somebody, or I need to contract somebody. I need to start building a team around this so I can get all this stuff done. And, you know, the idea here is with an agency, now you're working with many artists. You are probably doing a lot more managing than you were creating, mm-hmm. which is, again, no problem with either of these. But I always feel like that's an important thing to kind of mention, because people kept telling me that all the time. Like, oh, yeah, when you do that, you're just going to be a manager all the time. I'm like, no, I still make stuff. And like, I make stuff, whatever. Like, I'm comfortable with it. But yeah, there is a lot of managing, and it's not just telling people what to do. It's making sure that their benefits are in place, making sure that their workplace is good, making sure that they're feeling good about, you know, the stuff that's going on. It's not managing, it's leading a team. Mm-hmm. And leading is much harder than managing, but leading is much more fulfilling than managing. one and the same, but different perspectives, I guess.
Agreed.
And, you know, with this agency model, it's kind of a combination of freelance as well, where your clients might change of who you're looking to work with. Where, like, if you are a standard single freelancer, you're probably trying to work with a studio, like another studio of some sorts, or an agency, right? But then when you become an agency, you can still work with other studios or agencies, but you have a much higher value to brands. Now you're able to sort of unlock that door, being able to work with a brand directly, as opposed to being a freelancer and working indirectly with a brand, basically. Pros and cons here. Pros are you're able to take on bigger projects, bigger amount of work. There can be bigger revenue with those things, but that kind of brings me over to the con side of things, is that there's a much higher risk, right? There is more revenue when it comes to having an agency and working with brands, but there's also the cons of what happens when things go silent and when you can't book projects and you have a team of people that are kind of depending on you, and all of a sudden now they have nothing. And I've experienced both sides of this, and it's crazy, right? Like, one side you're so like feeling so amazing, feeling so optimistic, but then the other side happens and you're like, I'm the worst. And like, you just, it's a very volatile feelings spectrum, we'll say, when you run an agency. It's very difficult to do, but to me, that's like, it's like playing the game on expert level. And to me, I enjoy those kinds of things. I love the challenge. There's days that hurt, but there's days that feel amazing as well. So, Shelby, your thoughts?
As a producer, I, of course, like the agency model, because I like fostering teams. Mm-hmm. But that's frightening, you know? It's a big risk, because it's one thing if you're freelance and you're taking care of just yourself. It's another thing when you are right. taking care of a team. And when you have those moments where it's doing really great, I mean, you get to celebrate with everyone and everybody gets a share in that. But when you have the times where things aren't doing so great, you have to hope that you've cultivated a team that is understanding of that and can still work together with you through it. But not every team is like that. I think it's a really delicate balance. And I think you have to be the right kind of person to really be able to do that. Which isn't to say that, like, oh, there's a wrong type of individual. It's just, I think you have to be kind of hardened and understand what the risks are, and be willing to take them, you know, mm-hmm. be willing to say, hey, we're going to work on this project as hard as possible for a week because we think that it's important to the team. It's, you know, it's being willing to push boundaries and not be afraid. So that way you can keep you know, things afloat, keep people happy, keep the team moving.
Right. It's interesting you say that. Like, yeah, like I think it does take a certain kind of person. I think it's something that can be learned.
Mm-hmm.
If you really, truly wanted to be that person, because I feel like that's kind of what I did.
Yeah.
Like, I had the idea pretty early on. Like, I did. I wanted to jump straight to step three immediately out of school. I'm like, I want to lead a team. But again, it's not that simple. You can't just hire a bunch of people and say, let's go. We're now doing bigger projects. Like, it's just not that easy. Like, you have to get the experience and just the overall understanding. And, like, how do you know what to do in certain cases? You need to kind of go through these steps to be able to know how to do these things, right? But I don't know. There's honestly a lot, I think, that kind of needs to be worked out before going the sort of agency model. You need to understand, like, okay, well, how are you hiring a team? Now you need to be better at finances. Like, there's no option. Like, if you're not good at finances, even at a freelancer level, you can't do it. You can't go to the agency model. And maybe that sounds harsh, but that's the line in the sand that I will 100% draw. Because if you are just like, yeah, we probably have money, it'll be fine. Like, it will not be fine. like, you need to know down to the cent, like, how much is going in, how much is coming in, how much is going out, and kind of what the revenue production is of each employee that you have on your team, which sounds like the most uncreative thing ever, because, you know, you got into this because you're interested in seeing people grow and do their best work and do your best work as well. But then you start to, like, get to the point where you have to assign a number to every single person on your team. This isn't something I've ever talked to you about, Shelby, but, like, as a producer, when you go through these budgets, it's the same deal, right? Like, we need to have production out of each person that is kind of on our team. And that's business. That's how businesses run, right? And that can be extremely uncomfortable for people to be able to do those kinds of things. And again, if, like, if you're uncomfortable with that, great, stay a freelancer. There's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I'm talking a lot about the cons of again, running an agency, but again, I think the pros and cons are just much bigger than the other kind of two options. And it's a risk reward kind of thing, right? So I'm going to get into number four here. Now, so I talked about the first three. The last three, I honestly believe, is something that can be done either as a freelancer or as an agency. Mm-hmm. So number four here is a retainer model. So with a retainer model, again, you can be a single individual contractor, or you can be an agency. And with this retainer model, you're essentially saying to people, okay, you give me X amount of dollars without, like, any specific project guidelines or requirements. You give me this much money, and then we will use this money over time. And then I will pull from that money as I do that work, essentially. This is probably most common in, like, more, like, legal field type stuff. I think that's probably where I see this kind of model the most. And it's interesting because, like, one of the things that I really like to do, and I'm going to talk about it more, is look at other industries altogether and see, like, okay, how are they working with their clients? Because, you know, the creative field doesn't have all the answers. It's still a relatively young field. And I don't know, we kind of just have to look side to side from time to time to see, okay, is this the best practice? Is there another idea that we could do with things? So the retainer model is really fascinating when it comes to things like that. service-based work. So essentially what might happen is you might have a client that says like, okay, yeah, we have an ongoing list of projects that need to be done. We'll give you a retainer based on X amount per hour. So we could already see kind of where the con is here, because now you're getting paid based on hours. Like, yes, you're getting a big lump sum, but you're still kind of getting paid hourly. Where then the pros of a retainer is now you get to kind of plan for a future of what you do with your team. If you choose to be an individual, or if you choose to be an agency, you can then start to predict or have expectations of what the future looks like. This is always one of the most difficult things as an agency owner, is you can only see so far in the future. So you have to make decisions based on some kind of data and an expectation of, okay, well, in the past we've been able to do this. I can only assume that we're going to keep doing things exactly like that, or make certain projections, right? And if you can't see into the future, it's really difficult to run an agency. It's very stressful. Again, we go through these times all the time where it's like, oh, like sometimes I can see up to a year in the future, and sometimes I can only see a month into the future. But with a retainer, the biggest pro for that is they're basically giving you the promise of, hey, we're going to keep working with you. They're giving you the, acknowledgement of, here is a bucket of money, only pull from it what you need. I guess another con for this, though, is if that money doesn't have a timeline attached to it, they could reach out 5 years from now and say, like, okay, hey, I want you to do all that work now. And while it still is, you know, could be within the agreement, that's a really tough thing to take on whenever you had money in your bank account, and then all of a sudden, like, you've been using it for a couple of years, and all of a sudden they're like, all right, I want to use that now. And you're like, okay, well, I didn't plan for that to stay there, right? So it just makes things a little more difficult from a financial perspective, right? But I feel like this is one of the things where in the creative field, the retainer has sort of, I don't know, been like the new thing as of like 5-10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
where people are starting to use that more and more, because at least we can start to see into that future in some way or another, right? Any thoughts on the old retainer, Shelby, before I move on to our next one?
I like retainers. I think they're smart. I think the way that I thought about it when I first heard about retainers was like subscription services. I am Netflix, and somebody is subscribing for the mm-hmm. services that I'm able to provide. And I think it's a great way, again, as a producer, to have something on the horizon and to have an idea of what's coming up. I also like them because I think it helps develop a relationship better with your client. I think because there is right. regular work coming in, and also because they don't want to just be paying you each month and you're not working on anything, it allows you to also be able to work with them to come up with creative ideas for, okay, what should we be working on next? Right. Now, what are some different ways we could be doing this? Is there a campaign that maybe we could focus on for the next 6 months during our retainer period? You know, there's a lot of opportunity, I think, to be more creative collaborators within a retainer, as opposed to like, oh, here's just a one-time project. You know, here's just one big thing. When you have that retainer, it's ongoing work. And so you're always developing that relationship. You're constantly working together. And that's such a great opportunity to really be able to foster that relationship and see where it can grow.
Right. One of the places that I most often see retainers would be end of year tax time type mm-hmm. stuff, where if a client is like, hey, we have a remaining budget on the year, can we do a retainer? Because if we have remaining budget to spend, but we don't have the time to actually get the work done, it's, can I give you this money? And then we do it next year. Mm-hmm. My answer is always yes.
So anyone working at the end of the year, our answer is always yes.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I guess I find fascinating is like going through all of this, like all of this can be applied at any point, right? Like there is no, you don't have to commit to any like one model of how you work with people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the, I don't want to call it a trap, but it opens things up a lot when you start to be able to be flexible with how you're able to work with people. So I guess based on that, and you started talking about it a little bit already, but my next one is subscription. And I think this is, again, one of our newest ways of working with people is on an ongoing basis. Again, very similar to a retainer, but it's saying, okay, we will do X service with some stipulations for an entire month based on a monthly rate, a monthly payment that is made. Again, pros and cons to this, but the biggest thing I'll say is it has to be specific. If you just say, I'll do whatever, unlimited revisions, no matter what you ask for, I'll do it. Again, either as an agency or as an individual, both sides can take advantage of this sort of subscription model. And again, I think that this is something that's kind of entering the industry like a wrecking ball right now. I'm starting to see it like every week, starting to see more and more, again, either individuals or companies starting to take advantage of this concept. Because again, it allows you to have monthly reoccurring revenue, which specifically only existed for like tech software companies in the past, or SaaS companies, software as a service. But this idea of like, okay, well, what if you can charge a specific amount? If you can stipulate more specifically on how you're going to, how you will work together over the course of a month, then it can be really, really valuable for both sides. And again, this is something that we've started doing more and more this year. And again, yeah, there's pros and cons to it, but we know that at any given point, okay, if we take the work that needs to be done, we can do an amazing job. We get another month. We get to keep going. And the hope is, you know, to work with clients over the course of several months, even several years when you do something like this. So the con would be you're sort of sacrificing what would probably be higher revenue project-based fees. You're sacrificing those for smaller but ongoing work that sort of needs to be done. So it's kind of like a, do you prefer the short term, like bigger payments or the long term ongoing payments when you're working with people? So that's why it becomes better. It's really easy for both sides to win in this, right? As long as it's a long lasting relationship where the client has to pay less than what they normally would on a per month basis, but they still get, you know, a lot for their money. And then on the creative side of things, they can just have a much clearer vision of what that future sort of looks like with that client. And again, be able to focus on doing a set amount of tasks or have certain responsibilities. Your thoughts, Shelby?
Yeah, I think I already kind of said it, but just these long-term models, I think, are beneficial for everyone. Obviously, I mean, it's very easy for somebody to take advantage. But I think, again, if you have that relationship set up, both parties are, you know, trusting of one another, and your agreements are laid out well, there are very few downsides to it. I love those opportunities to build relationships. And I think, too, to actually, on those long terms, really be able to, like, get into a brand. And I think it's great for the artist, too, to become so familiar with a brand, especially if it's a style that they love, that they can feel really passionately about, that they can help develop as well over the length of that relationship, I think is really something special.
Right. To me, it's kind of like the ultimate.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you can get to this point, again, yes, there's still cons to it. But again, any time that we're paid money to do anything, we got to do work for it, right? We are not this kind of SaaS company. None of us generally are as creatives. Like, we do hands-on work. We do create something from scratch.
Yep.
You know, it's not like a software that you develop and then get people to sign up for it, which again would be great, but I don't know. It's as far as service-based industry goes, I feel like the subscription service is one of the best models that, again, whether that's as an individual or as a company, to be able to offer something like that, maybe not to everybody necessarily, kind of like you were saying, Shelby, that's like, you need a trusted relationship to be able to enact something like this. Because if it's just somebody you've never met before and they just sign up for a subscription service, there's going to be all kinds of questions and misunderstanding and miscommunication, I feel like. So to me, it's sort of like leveling up. And to me, that's kind of the top end of it.
Yeah, you're essentially becoming another part of the team. So when you are signing, like when you are on the subscription service, you're basically just another team member for them. You know, when they're going through their monthly assignments, you're on their list. You are one of the members. And that's a really good place to be, especially if you already have an established trusting relationship.
Right. You know, I guess for an individual, it kind of, I don't know, travels a little parallel with standard employment, mm-hmm. almost in a way. It's like, okay, you're going to be paid a set amount of money to do a certain amount of tasks. but ideally, as an individual, you wouldn't dedicate your entire time to that person. You can kind of get into this like kind of fractional world that exists right now where people will offer up like, hey, you get 20 hours or 10 hours a week of my time if you sign up. And then they work with four or five different clients at a time. A good way to kind of diversify who you're working with. One client drops off, you're fine. You just have to fill that one spot, basically. I don't have fractional services in here, but I would definitely put that under the umbrella of subscription. Just another thing that I see a lot of where it makes a lot of sense for individuals to go that fractional route more than it does an agency. But that's just kind of one of the ways that it sort of works for both. Okay, so the last one that I have here, it's kind of a little bit of a wild card here. Just like I was saying before, like sometimes you have to look around and see what other industries do and see if there's a way that maybe it could work for you. Like Again, I love to see new ways of people just running businesses, like how they work with their clients, how they get paid, whatever. I love to see new things like that. And my first thing that I do is I always go to my notebook. And I'm like, if we did that, how would it work? And it's just kind of like a fun thought exercise, I guess. Most of the time it's like, no, this is where it breaks down. This is where it doesn't work. But like, especially if I'm like hiring a roofer or a contractor to work on my house or going to the car shop and how they work with people. Like I am constantly just taking note of like experiences and like restaurants. Like if I have a good experience at a restaurant, I'm like, wait, how could I take that? And like, how could we apply that to what we do? Like it's different obviously, but that was cool. Like, it made me feel good, whatever. So the last one is something that I don't see a whole lot of people doing right now, and that's e-commerce. So being able to sell a service as like on a store, basically. Mm-hmm. Now this is something that we did with Things by Things. You go to thingsbythings.com. We basically, it's a big experiment for us.
Yep.
But it's the idea of, okay, if you take a narrow scope project and you can bundle it and you know specifically how much time it's going to take you, you can then sell that as a product on a website. Mm-hmm. It's super weird. Nobody does that. But that's kind of why it was fun for me to sort of mess around with some of the stuff and get the whole team on board of like, hey, we're doing something crazy, and it might work, it might not, we'll see. But it's just this idea of like, how easy could we make purchasing creative services? And that's where the experiment is. Like, if it was as simple as somebody comes across on a website and goes to add cart and then they purchase, that's pretty cool. Like, I don't know how much simpler it could possibly get. Awesome. Right. And maybe there'll be something that comes along someday, but, I don't know. It's an exciting idea. Now, pros and cons to this. Cons would be, it's very limited scope. And you're probably not being able to upsell at that point. Like you're kind of downselling a little bit more. In general, that's, you know, in business, you would rather upsell rather than downsell. But sometimes in certain situations, it might make perfect sense to do that. Mm-hmm. The thing is, though, afterwards, after you are able to work with somebody on a small scale project like that, well, now they've worked with you before, and now you can start that upselling process and start building a relationship from the ground floor up to some of your bigger products potentially. Credit card fees. if you have an e-commerce site set up, there's 3% of every transaction that you're losing. And on bigger numbers, it can be a little bigger of an expense. But the pros again are, I don't know, the creativity of being able to work with people where they are, which again, sometimes budgets go up, sometimes budgets go down, depending on the world situation at any point. If you have that capability to sell down and be able to offer a specific product like that, it can open up a world of opportunities, especially later on down the road. Any thoughts about e-commerce, Shelly?
Yeah, I love the idea of basically being able to like simplify and productize your services. Because for me, even if you're, so say it's not working, right? Say maybe people aren't buying it. What you can do in that is still use it as a way to say, these are all the services I can offer. These are all the things that I'm capable of. And even that is important. So just having that base understanding of what is someone capable or a studio capable of is important. I think obviously it's a very different business strategy, I think, than a lot of creatives would be used to. Because it is so simplified, because you are being able to list things out so concisely. But like as a producer, I like that. I want to be able to see what this studio or this person is capable of. How can I bring them on for just this one part of the project? What are their rates for that one part of the project? You know, if I just want to have them on for a week, what is that going to cost? This shows me, you know, if I want to be able to purchase a service for 1 week or 2 weeks or a month or whatever, I can see what those rates are and I can understand very quickly, you know, what I'm getting into with this studio or this person. And I think a lot of clients are also, that's something that they could see is very beneficial as well.
Yep. I think, I mean, you talk about productized services, and I put that under the sort of e-commerce umbrella, or maybe it's productized services and e-commerce falls under the umbrella, either one. But being able to just bundle up a specific service that you offer and being able to sell that thing at a set price. So much of this industry will not talk about pricing. You know, you ask almost any creative business that exists, if you call them up and say, how much does it cost to do this? They're going to say, well, that depends. And then they'll go through all the questions, and then a day or two later, they'll give you a price. And we're like that still. I mean, I try not to be. I try to give ranges as early as possible. But it's just, it's too hard. You can't just give a single number on this, all of these variables. Because if you give that number too early, and then all of a sudden you find something out that makes it way more expensive, then you just kind of messed up. So having some productized services, I think, is, it's a really interesting way for people to get a better understanding of what your pricing is going to be. So even if they are interested in that bigger thing, they can at least see some numbers and just have a specific idea.
And that transparency too is, I mean, really something important. And I think it's great too for building that relationship, because say you do have a client and they're like, oh, I just want to have, you know, some social media assets, right? So they purchase, you know, 15 social media assets and they have you for a week or something. You've been able to work with that person. They understand how you work. You've gotten in through the door. You can lead that into bigger conversations. And the thing is, you've already started it on, you know, the basis of trust, because you were being transparent from the get-go with those prices, you know, how you were going to be working together. And that is a really good precedent.
Right. Yeah. So, that's all I had there. Let's go into some final thoughts here. I guess you're kind of getting into it a little bit, but keep it going, Shelby. Final thoughts.
My final thoughts. I'm just going to keep going with the relationship perspective on this. I think there's a few different ways that obviously you can go about this as a creative. You know, if you do want to go into standard employment, the relationships that you're going to form are going to be very different than if you follow maybe one of these other routes, especially if you're kind of deciding to take the creative business more into your own hands. You know, standard employment, you'll be joining a team versus starting one of your own or kind of being off on your own and just joining things whenever you want if you're freelance. And I think, yeah, for me, a lot of it does fall into the relationships that you want to form. If you want to do something more long-term, if you're just doing project by project, if you want to be a part of a long-term team, maybe you want to go see many teams in a year. That's kind of where I would base a lot of my decision-making in that. Obviously, there's a million factors. There's financial, there's, you know, everything else that plays into making a decision into what model you want to participate in. But I think that first thing to consider really is, how do you want to have those relationships and develop as a creative in that way?
Yeah, I think it's a really good point, because like thinking about yourself as an individual before kind of like jumping into the stuff, again, you can't just choose like, okay, I'm going to go right to number six. Mm-hmm. Like you can't. You could. It's probably just not going to work out super well. It's very much a ladder of sorts to kind of climb. But I think it's a great idea to, depending on where you're at on the ladder right now, to identify, like, am I happiest working like with the same team, like often? Mm-hmm. Am I happiest working alone? Am I happiest, working with a client like on an ongoing basis or single project? Like there's a lot of things to sort of keep in mind for yourself personally as you go into a lot of this stuff. But for my final thought, what I would say is there is definitely no right or wrong answer. And for me personally, it's how do I implement all of these things at the same time and figure out what things work best? No, it can make you look like a crazy person, and I take that risk every day. I definitely have some weird ideas that I'm like, hey, on Monday I could have an idea for how something works, and then by Wednesday I'm like having calls with clients trying to like sell that idea or something, or posting about it on social media by Thursday. Like, that's just kind of how I work, because I'm constantly interested in trying to figure out what is the best way at any given point. What is the best way that works for us, our team, and our clients? Mm-hmm. And it's a sort of exploration. It's just interesting to me. And it's like tinkering with a business model basically on a daily basis, which is where I get a lot of my creativity from, or get to use my creativity, I guess, in that way. But I don't know. It's like, okay, well, how can you, you know, if you are an agency and, you know, how could you implement something like a subscription service or a retainer or even like some sort of productized service or e-commerce? Like, you can do all of these things. And the other thing is, you could always change it too. Like, if you go one direction and you're like, that's not working. I see it all the time of people going from standard employment to freelance to having an agency. And then a couple of years later, they go back to full-time standard employment because they realize after doing that, hey, that was the thing that made me happiest. So let me go back over to that. Same thing with, like, I've seen people start agencies and then drop down to freelance because they're like, oh, I didn't want to manage people. I just wanted to be myself and just take it a little bit easier. Anyway, yeah. So I guess that's what I would say is, we have this list of ways that you can work with people, ways that you can make money as a creative. This is probably another episode or another name for this episode is how you make money as a creative. But there's going to be new things that pop up pretty much constantly. So it's keep looking around, see how other people work. And the biggest thing that I'll say, though, is like the benefit always has to be there for the client. Otherwise, it just has to go to one of these methods that already exist. So anything new that you try, you have to be able to quantify a little bit. Like, oh, hey, if you do this, it's going to help you in this way. And I would say that's the first thing that you have to be able to answer if you start changing things up or trying to get creative with what your business model actually is.
Yeah.
All right. On that note, I'm going to have Julia Child send us off.
All right. Thank you for listening to the Command Z Show. And I love it. Goodbye.
The Command Z Show is created by Made by Things. And if you have a question you would like us to discuss, you can send a message at cmdz.show. And if you like what you hear, leave a review. We'll see you next week with a brand new show.